That little pig. That'll do.
So Floyd stays in Iowa City for another year. I think he's starting to like it there, Tori.
Well, I think we need to get him a pet bull to have in the
that would be nice
trophy case as well from Wisconsin, and maybe whatever god awful thing we play Nebraska for. I don't know what that is.
Heroes trophy. I'm not sure what it looks like. Nobody on the team actually is sure what it looks like. We never get close enough to it. But yes,
we're going to get it.
Yeah, no, Floyd's got himself a nice little apartment on South Johnson, and some co-eds moved in above him, and he's not really in any kind of a hurry to go up north. It's cold up there.
It is, you know, it's nice and cozy and warm here, and it looks like the Iowa football program might be settling into at least average to above average again, which is, after last year, something to be happy about.
We can always hope. Welcome to 12 Saturdays. I'm James Bladle.
And I'm Tori Breck.
And we are thrilled, cautiously, would you say cautiously, optimistic?
You know, we're fans. We don't have to be cautious.
I'm still cautious.
I'm just going to be optimistic.
Yeah. I think fans go into this mode here where that they try to protect their own feelings by, you know, not buying in too soon or too hard to a team on the upswing. But I think that, you know, I think there's little doubt now that Iowa is a much improved team.
Yeah, they are much improved. I don't think they're even back to maybe the 2008 through 2010 level of good. And I know you and I have gone back and forth a million times about that 2010 team, but nobody can deny the talent level was at
the
contending
talent.
Big Ten championship level. Right. But boy, it sure is. I mean, it just looks different than last year, doesn't it?
It looks different. It feels different. I was thinking about what you were saying about when Rudock is, you know, takes a snap and drops back. You don't feel that. You don't pucker the way you used to last year.
You know, the it wasn't a big play, and I think it actually was on third down, and they didn't even quite get the first down. But the little like flare pass that he threw, like over the back of the defender, right into Bullock's hand while he was it Bullock or somebody else, but right on the stride along the sideline. Mm-hmm. That was like an NFL throw. I mean, I was so excited to see that. We haven't seen an Iowa quarterback do that in a long time. And granted, you know, they didn't get the first down. I think they ended up punting or going for a field goal after that or something. But wow, just to see a guy that has that kind of touch and those many kind of throws is pretty exciting, especially when you remember he's only a sophomore.
Well, and I tweeted or retweeted a stat that I saw this week, which is that right now through these five games, Rudock has as many rushing touchdowns as Brad Banks did in the 2002 season.
That's a great stat. And here's another great stat when I put in the column this week. Rudock has, in two road starts, which are both against rivals in rivalry games, has a 2-0 record on the road. He has now equaled the total amount of road wins as James Vandenberg had in his entire career.
Wow. Why wasn't this guy starting last
year? That will be a mystery for the ages.
So the quarterback, obviously a big factor in the difference. What else is striking you as different than last year?
I just think everybody on the offense seems like they're on the same page a little bit better. They seem to have found an identity and to know what they're doing. I think Greg Davis's offense is starting to look the way he wants it to look. I think he's feeling
Is it, though,
more comfortable?
I'm going to stop you there because I think that the Northern Illinois game, I definitely would have agreed with you. But as we go further into the season, he's starting to look like the Greg Davis interpretation of the Ken O'Keefe offense.
No, I don't necessarily think that. I mean, you're still seeing a lot of those shorter intermediate passes, a lot of screens. They're getting up to the line quickly and giving Ruddock time to actually audible and make some changes. They're putting a lot into his hands. So, I mean, I definitely think it's a hybrid of a kind of a Ferentz philosophy with Davis's schemes. It's kind of what I'm seeing. And I think it's working well together.
I see it as almost the traditional Iowa power run, play action offense on fast forward. Because you're running, you know, 70, 80 plays a game instead of, you know, low 60s.
Well, whatever it is, it seems to be working pretty good now, except for the red zone. That's the big red flag, I think, as we start to see the schedule get more difficult. You know, gotta break into the end zone with touchdowns a little bit more. So,
yeah, I agree, and I think it's reassuring to see that Ferentz is identified that as something they need to work on as well. I think the other improvement would have to go on the other side of the ball is that the linebackers are doing fantastically well because the defensive line is just, you know, I mean, they look a million times better than they did last year, which means they're probably went from an F minus to a C plus, you know.
You know, they're doing just enough to give time and space for the linebackers to do their duty. You know, I mean, they're not going to be confused with the 85 Bears or anything anytime soon, or maybe even Michigan State or Ohio State at this point. But, you know, but they're playing good disciplined defense. You know, I think about how well Iowa's been able to bottle up running quarterbacks so far this year. I mean, they're not giving up the edge. They're just not letting that really popular read option type of play work against them. I mean, that's something that bodes well, especially as we start to play teams like Northwestern that like to run that type of, and Nebraska that like to run that type of offense.
Well, and we're seeing that when they don't have to bail out the front four every single play, that we're seeing now what these senior linebackers can do. And the answer is, oh, basically just dominate every defensive statistical category, the Big Ten, 1, 2, 3, you know, between Morris, Kirksey, and Hitchens. I mean, all three of these guys are just, you know, trying to figure out which one of them is going to be the defensive MVP. You know, and it's all because the guys up front are actually doing a pretty decent job now.
Exactly. I mean, it's really fun to watch them this year, and just kind of scary to think that they're not going to be here next year. Yeah, the three of them. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, right? Let's hopefully we'll have some more dominating performances to enjoy as we go. Which brings
Dominating performances. I mean, the schedule does get tougher. We've got Purdue, but other than that, it's all, you know, it all grades uphill, right?
Yeah, what did you think about Iowa opening as a favorite against Michigan State?
I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, obviously their defense is amazing, and to stop them on offense, all you have to do apparently is show up. So I don't really know what to make of Michigan State. I don't think that Michigan State. I think that watching how Notre Dame has struggled really kind of made a light bulb go off in my head a little bit about, well, you know, maybe. You know, maybe Michigan State, you have to put them in that category of not as good as we thought they were, similar to, even though they're undefeated, similar to what people are saying about Michigan.
Right.
So, you know, all those things said, I think, you know, we can agree that this team looks different, feels different, and it's definitely, you know, several orders of magnitude more fun to watch, both, you know, on television and in person, and more fun to talk about. So let's, you know, temper that a little bit. I mean, how did we feel, you know, last year when we got our fourth win, you know, Michigan State, it was double overtime, if I recall. You know, we felt like, hey, we were starting to maybe, we had a pretty rough non-conference, but maybe starting to put the pieces back together. And
yeah, the difference to me is that even with the wins they got last year, now the Minnesota game last year did look good. I'll give you that. But that the Michigan State game, that was a slog. I just kind of felt like they were kind of like, you could tell the offense especially just didn't have what it took last year. I mean, even in the games that they managed to win, you know, there wasn't the diversity of attack that you're seeing now. And I think that made a big difference. And again, I don't think any of us felt comfortable with Vandenberg behind center in the Davis system at all. It just looked like a round hole in a square peg or something like that. I mean, and the hangover from that Central Michigan game, I mean, you have that looming in your head. That's not like losing to Northern Illinois.
No, that's like losing to Northern Iowa.
Right.
It's just something that won't go away. And I think, yeah, you can't ever rest or be comfortable with the team, no matter how much they progress, when they drop a game like that early in the year. But we did have some, I wouldn't say optimism, but we did have a feeling that perhaps the worst was over. And unfortunately, the worst was yet to come.
Right. Well, you know, and you have to remember, Penn State was 1 year removed from, you know, all their off-field incidents. And, you know, Iowa had had their number for quite a long time, and they were coming into a night game at Kinnick. And so, yeah, I think optimism was real high at the time. And, boy, did they dismiss that quickly. I mean, that was a buzzsaw. That was just, you know, I can't imagine that, that the team this year seems to have more grit and character to me. And maybe that's just hindsight being 2020 after what ended up being a terrible season last year. But boy, I do you see them just getting completely steamrolled in a home game this year?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't see it coming last year. And I think a lot of that had to do with injuries. So maybe we should have said something about just the offensive line staying healthy and playing better this year would be another big difference.
Absolutely.
So my question to you is, how, if, let's say, worst case scenario, you don't win again until Purdue and you end with, you know, 5-7, maybe some heartbreakers, maybe some blowouts, but it's 5-7 and you don't go to a bowl, do you still feel that this is an improved squad?
Well, it's going to depend on how they look doing it. I mean, you know, if the games are competitive and they look like they belong on the field with the other teams, then, you know, will I be thrilled? No. Will I be panicking? No. No, I won't be doing that either. And you know, I think, you know, it's setting up that you can see that the young talent on this team is getting back to what we're used to seeing out of Iowa. And I think there's still going to be some growing pains along the way, particularly this season. But, you know, I think the schedule starts to get easier then again next year, too. So yeah. I think things will look up. But really, Jim, it's impossible for them to go 5-7 because of my T-shirt.
Well, that gets us. That's an excellent segue, by the way, to your column, which is your T-shirt. And tell us the story, how you found the lucky T-shirt.
Well, my wife had been getting on me a while back about how many stupid T-shirts I have, and I just have them crammed into drawers and, you know, like just wadded up and all this. So she's like, you got to get rid of some of these, get them out to Goodwill or whatever. So I was going through the drawers and pulling through them, and I pulled that one out. And if I remember correctly, I think I got it during the 2002 season. I mean, it's old. And I was this close to just pitching it into the Goodwill pile. I'm like, you know what? I kind of like this T-shirt, and it's still comfortable. I mean, yeah, it's kind of getting skeevy on the front, and the logo is kind of getting peely and falling off. And so I decided to wear it to the Missouri State game, and they won. So I've just been wearing it ever since, and they haven't
lost.
See,
my worst T-shirt.
So I don't know what else to say.
My worst T-shirt that I wore last time to mow the grass, and I thought, man, this thing is so beat up, and the collar's ripped, and it just needs to go. And I looked at it, and it was from an ICANN meeting in 2007. So this is 5 years older than that.
I still have in my closet, and this is the honest God truth, I have a Iowa journalism T-shirt with the department number on it that I got in 1993. And, I mean, it's like just ripped to hell. I mean, it's just awful, but I wear it about like once a year, and my wife won't be seen with me in it. It's pretty bad.
I have a T-shirt that I borrowed from you in the 80s. I think it's a Bauhaus
T-shirt.
Really?
That's hilarious. Or something like the that. Bad thing about lucky T-shirts, though, is that they're kind of like a Aladdin's magic lamp. You know, you get like five rubs of it there's only so much magic in it. It's not perpetual.
Well, wait a second. If we're winning again because you found this shirt, then and if we just as a audience grant you that power, that you have turned this program around by finding the shirt, That also means, by, you know, deduction, that it's your fault that they've been in this downslide for the last 3 years.
Because I think it's because of that one guy in Waterloo that didn't have his lucky socks.
See, I think it's because of our friend Chris that washed his jacket.
Yeah, his old 80s satin Hayden Fry aviator sunglasses jacket.
Exactly.
That could be.
And I also think it's because when they moved my seat, I used to hit the 1929 cornerstone on my way into the stadium every Saturday. And I haven't done that until I started again this year.
Do you remember Punt Block Corner?
Yes, of course. We had anytime we needed a special play on special teams, we went to Punt Block Corner. That's when you could smoke in Kinnick, though.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And when, you know, you and I smoked, was years ago.
Go back there and just kind of sit there and have a cigarette and wait for the special, wait for the touchdown on special teams.
Exactly. Good times.
Yeah.
Good times. So, but, you know, superstitions are part of the fun of sports, I think. So.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps it interesting. It makes you feel, I think, it gives you the illusion that you have more of an impact on the game than you really do as a fan. So.
Well, right, because as a fan, I mean, you are so completely powerless. And, you know, I think it's always funny, you know, you hear those debates when people say, you know, oh, you shouldn't be so hard on the players. They're taking it 10 times harder than you are. But, you know, they get to, like, go to practice and hit people again and then get to go try to redeem themselves on the actual field of battle. Yeah. As a fan, you don't get to do any of that. You're just an observer. Yeah. And so if you really have emotional energy invested in it, which I think hardcore fans like us do, you know, I'm not willing to concede that it's worse for the players. It's worse in a different way.
Yeah. But totally they are empowered. They can do something about it.
But they could do something about it, exactly. Where a fan, you know, you just are along for the ride, good or bad.
But do you think that the coaches then have it worst of all? Because they can do something about it, but they're at arm's length. They have to tell somebody else exactly what to do about it, then watch them not execute.
Well, right. And I think, you know, all coaches at this level are pretty damn smart. And so, you know, they're standing there going, this is how this is supposed to look. This is not how this is supposed to happen. Yeah, I've got to think being a coach has got to be the most, you know, look at how much gray hair and stress it produces. You know?
Oh, we were watching, I was watching some of those interviews, not just even going back to 02, but even just going back to like the 04 season. And, you know, Kirk had a full head of dark hair. And not just that, his mannerism was slightly different too. He seemed like a lot more energetic and, you know, was speaking in high speed. Now it's like everything he says is his words are couched a little bit in caution. He's realized as he's talking to the press and he's holding his tongue. And yes, he has this, you know, this head full of white locks.
But also, you know, what, the massive buyout and the multi-million dollars a year. So, you know,
supposed to ever bring that up.
We can bring it up in this context. I don't bring it up in the context of, you know, should he or should he not be Iowa's coach? He earned his pay by his past performance. You know, you can argue all you want about, you know, future and whether the length of the contract was a great negotiation or whatever. I don't care, but I do not begrudge him his cash at all. I'm just saying, you know, the stress and the gray hair does get you paid too. So
yeah. Do you think he's able to focus a little bit or whatever? We were talking about how there's not a Ferentz on the team this year, right? Isn't that true for the first time in how long?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know.
I mean, his son is a coach.
Right.
But he's not coaching.
Yeah, no, I don't think that really makes any difference. I mean, I always got the impression that if anything, he'd probably have been a little harder on his own.
Yeah, but it's just going to be a distraction. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I guess we just have to watch this season unfold one game at a time and hope that we are watching this team on the upswing, that four wins is just the beginning and not the sum total of the 2013 season.
Well, I know this sounds easier to say when they're winning, but, you know, even the Northern Illinois game, I was entertained by it. I mean, I was disappointed in the outcome and I was a little upset, like, oh man, that interception, why didn't they just run the ball, et cetera. But the product on the field is definitely easier on the eyes, I think, this year. So, you know, I'm hoping that that continues. No blowouts, no just, you know, complete bed crappings or anything like that. That's my goal.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good goal and I'm looking forward to, now you will or will not be at the next game.
I will not be at the Michigan State game. I am on a business conference in Philadelphia this rest of this week, actually, and returning. What sucks is if it was a 2:30 start, my flight actually arrives in Moline at 12:55. So I was kind of doing the math in my head. I'm like, okay, if I had my tickets on me and my car is parked there, and I could have probably got there by the end of the first quarter, I think. But unfortunately, it's an 11 a.m. game, yeah. So I'm going to have to miss it.
Oh, that's a bummer. But well, let's toast this one, and then we can talk
sure.
a little bit about what to expect in the next week from Sparty. So, yeah, as you were mentioning, you're going to miss this one, and that's usually my fault, I think. Usually I'm the one that's missing game. And which one am I going to miss this year? Michigan, I think.
Is that it? Well, and I'm going to have to rush back for the Wisconsin game. I do have a new job this year, for those of you who don't know, and so I am actually doing more travel. Mine is primarily, well, all domestic, unlike Jim, who is a world globetrotter, but...
Yes, I'm in the yes. Republic of Arizona right now. Papers, please.
Yeah, well, you had to go to South Africa earlier this year, which you said was a really enjoyable
flight.
That's
2 days by plane from everywhere. So, yeah, it's but, you know, it is what it is. And you know, it's like I tell my wife, you travel so you don't have to move around a lot and you get to stay in Iowa and you get to make as many home games as you can. Otherwise, you're probably changing your address every 3 to 5 years. So,
well, speaking of people with a global perspective, we now come to our new segment, Ich bin Expert, where we talk to somebody about things other than football and sports, somebody who's an expert in a
I'm
certain
really looking
area.
Forward to and our guest this week.
Yeah, and our guest this week is a gentleman named Yashar. And Yashar is a guy that we've tailgated with a few times, big Iowa fan, Iowa alum. And he's currently the executive director of the Iowa United Nations Association. Yashar is also a native of the country of Iran, and which has obviously been in the news a lot here this whole last few years, but particularly this week. So should be a really interesting conversation. So welcome, Yashar. We have Yashar on the line here. And Yashar, tell us a little bit about how you ended up at the University of Iowa.
Yeah, so long story short, you know, I was born in Iran. I've hopped around a bit stateside here in America, but we moved to Iowa City when I was in high school. My dream school was UCLA. I moved here from Los Angeles, but it was a lot cheaper on the family pocket if I attended here in Iowa City. So I ended up at the University of Iowa, and I don't regret it one bit. I love being a Hawkeye.
And when did you come to Iowa City? You said when you were in high school?
I was a freshman in high school.
Okay, so you went to like City High or West or something like that?
I went to West High.
Okay, great. And then you just stay there for college. And you still live in Iowa City, don't you?
Yeah, I've been here a long time now. I pretty much consider myself an Iowan through and through.
But you still have family. Your immediate family, obviously, is with you here in the States, right? But you still have family in Iran?
Right. My parents are in New Mexico and Albuquerque. I have a brother in L.A. He also went to Iowa. But most of my family is still inside of Iran. I have something like 40 cousins in Iran. And some of the other relatives
that
have...
That is so weird. I have like 40 cousins in West Davenport.
So here's a question for you, Yashar. Would you consider yourself more of an Iowan or an Iowa-ranian?
Iowa-ranian, I guess I would say.
You don't have to answer that racist crap.
That wasn't a racist question. It's like somebody from Madison is a Madisonian. There's different ways of saying it.
I kind of feel like I'm in between both worlds, you know?
So you have family there. I mean, how is it easy to communicate with them or to stay in touch, or is that basically impossible?
It's easier than people think. We use Facebook. I chat a lot with relatives through Facebook. You can call them, but you know, you hear these crazy clicking sounds in the background. I mean, I'm just assuming someone's listening. But Facebook is the basic mode of communication these days.
And you went there recently as well, right? What was that like?
It was really eye-opening. You know, I fell into the media hype in the West that kept demonizing Iran. I was really scared. But once I got through the airport security, it was a really safe place. I felt very safe. Tehran's huge. It's like something like 9th or 10th in the world as far as
population. Yeah, it's one of the biggest cities on the planet, or in Asia, which makes it kind of the biggest on the planet, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's enormous, and I honestly felt as safe there as I've felt anywhere here stateside, even safer than places like, you know, our larger cities like Chicago and New York. And people were very inviting. I mean, I'm very pale for an Iranian, so they assumed I was a foreigner in many cases. I got invited to so many dinners, and I got so many discounts, you know, at ice cream shops and what have you. And just people there are very cordial, and they're very sensitive about the way they're viewed internationally.
And did they like immediately start speaking English to you, or?
Yeah, definitely. What's interesting is, you know, Iran, 70% of the population is under 30, and among that crowd, it's really cool to know English. So a lot of people would come up to me, and many of them speak very fluent English. And some of them you could tell pick it up from the movies. You know, they'll call me dude, or they kind of sound like Keanu Reeves or someone like that. But it's really interesting. I mean, there are entire bookstores, like the whole bookstore is dedicated to learning English.
But do you speak Farsi at all, or?
Yeah, I speak Farsi. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm super fluent, but if you, like, took me by helicopter and dropped me in the middle of nowhere in Iran, I could make my way out by talking to the local folks. You know, like, I can speak probably, like, at a middle school level, I'd say.
So one of the questions I had, Yashar, is that, you know, people sort of have it in their mind, I think, when they think about the Middle East and Iran, of course, is that it's very kind of, you know, backwards, or it's very third world. You know, kind of let us know a little bit more. It's actually quite cosmopolitan, and historically it's been one of the, you know, centers of civilization for millennia, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the Silk Road used to run through Iran. The Persian Empire in its heyday was more powerful than their neighbors in Europe. And you know, there's been a longstanding tradition of contributions to in the sciences and so forth. And, you know, when I went to Iran, I'll give you one example. I took the metro in Tehran, and it was the nicest subway I've ever been on. I mean, the cars were air-conditioned, which is awesome when it's like 100 degrees outside. But it was just – everything was really clean and very new. I mean, there's certainly there are parts of Tehran where it's a bit dated, and you could tell you're not in a core nation. But as far as Iran development there, they're definitely getting caught up with much of the rest of the world.
And is their economy still, like, completely dependent upon oil and oil exports, or are they starting to diversify a little bit more? Or where does your family, for example, what do they do for living? Where do they work?
Well, the economy, I mean, they do rely on oil primarily, but it's, you know, it's interesting because they import oil. They can't, their refineries are really out of date, so they export benzine. But they do, like, for example, Russia takes in more natural gas from Iran than anywhere else. They do have a growing natural gas industry. But, you know, as far as my relatives, many of them have mom and pop stores. Many of them are working for the government. The government there is really huge as far as the workforce. And, you know, they bus government workers to these anti-American rallies to kind of make it appear as if the people are anti-American. But those are just government workers that are just regular folks who are kind of bussed into these rallies. But, yeah, I mean, they're very tricky like that. But, yeah, I mean, it, generally speaking, I mean, the economy is kind of in the tank right now. The sanctions have really crippled the currency. It's actually, at one point last year, it was the second worst it was behind Somalia as the Whoa. Weakest currency on Wow. the planet.
So what would you say, Yashar, as a Iranian American, is the most annoying thing for you in as far as it goes when people have a something that they don't understand about where you're from or your country?
Yeah, I guess for me it's two things. One, people assume, like you said earlier, that it's a dangerous place to be. I felt much safer there, to be honest, than I do in the States. Second, and this is so much, I don't take it, I'm not offended when I hear, but most Iranians are, when they're referred to as Arabs, it's like referring to someone from China as Japanese.
Yeah.
And the very similar to that situation, there is a rivalry between Iranians and Arabs, and many Iranians are quite proud of their Persian background. So that's one of the things that you see often in the West, is people just lump that whole region together, which is kind of why we tend to be in a mess there in the first place.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean about the big city. I mean, I was in Beijing, and there's something about being in a huge city. If it's a police state, you're safe, right? I mean, you're not going to get mugged when there's a cop on every corner. But so that's the perception, you say, like the misconception that folks have here in the U.S. About your background. But when you go over there, what sort of misconceptions do you run into with your family that's still in Iran?
How they feel about America?
Or you or your family that left. Do they have misconceptions about your life here? Do they have misunderstandings about how you've grown up?
Well, one of the things I found really funny is, the youth, many Iranians have satellite television. It's illegal, but everyone has them, including some ayatollahs, actually. But so they get MTV, and they watch American movies. And more than one occasion, I was asked how many girlfriends, plural, I have. They think all we do here is party on boats, just like a hip-hop music video. they really think we live that sort of lifestyle.
Well, I do.
Many of the people I ran into, you kind of have to explain that, people work in America, and they just view America as this, like, heavenly place where you don't need to do anything, and everything just comes to you, and it's just one big party. But that was satellite television, I think, really made an impression on Iranians as to how they view America.
But, Yashar, you live in Iowa City, so how many girlfriends do you have, and how many parties are you going to every week?
That's how we view your life, too, just because we're over 40.
If we live in Davenport.
Hey, man, I'm turning 30 in November.
Yeah, that's Crimea River.
So let's talk a little bit, Yashar, about recent developments. We've seen a real effort, I think, by the Iranian president, who, as you've explained to me in the past, doesn't really have much power, but is sort of the face of the government over there, to sort of reach back out to the West and say, we're really serious about, having better relations and taking care of this concern about nuclear weapons. What do you make of this whole situation as somebody who is kind of, clued in a little bit more than most of us are?
Right. The president of Iran is not like the president here. Constitutionally in Iran, the president is not the commander in chief like you are here. Doesn't have a whole lot of power even in foreign policy. Mostly they set the domestic political agenda. But I view these recent developments, like the phone call and him reaching out to Israelis and Jews and so forth through Twitter. I think this is a concerted effort on the part of the regime on the whole. I think they're ready to sit down for a number of reasons, one of which being the economic situation in Iran. The U.S. is still working towards another round of sanctions, and they're really, really feeling the grip of sanctions, I think, these days. So, with Rouhani, it's kind of like the Hawkeyes. I mean, people are just want to know, is he the real deal or not? And we'll have to wait and see, much like the Hawkeyes. But I'm cautiously optimistic. And I think he's a good person to have as the president in terms of outreach, just because he seems to be much more open-minded to the West than the previous president.
But he's taking his cues from the religious authorities that are behind the scenes, right?
Right. It's mostly the Supreme Leader. But Rouhani and the Supreme Leader have had a very long-term relationship. And, you know, it's been put out there in the past that he's been able to convince the Supreme Leader to go certain routes with policy. So Rouhani in particular, unlike Ahmadinejad, is much more of an insider himself. So he has his own influence within that group. I didn't think Ahmadinejad wielded much power, but I would say that Rouhani is a bit more significant power behind him.
So, Yashar, to follow your Hawkeye metaphor, Rouhani is kind of like Greg Davis coming in with the new offense, Kirk Ferentz is the Supreme Leader who's kind of conservative and stuck in his ways and doesn't necessarily want to change, but he's going to make it happen.
Exactly. I would say it's a perfect analogy on both fronts. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Well, so then we've Gary solved Barda, everything.
Who's Gary Barda in this equation? That's all I want.
Allah.
Yeah, something. So, but here's something I've always thought to be true, and I don't know if you would agree, but do we sometimes in our media or, you know, in the U.S. or the West here get wrapped up in the domestic theater of some of these countries? Like when Ahmadinejad used to go on TV and say, yeah, I'm going to, you know, push Israel into the sea and burn America to the ground. And our, you know, our news people and our radio and cable TV talk shows would go ballistic. And really, he wasn't talking to us, though, when he was saying those things. He was trying to maybe sound tough in front of his own people and his own domestic enemies or opponents. Is that usually how this goes, or?
In my view, that's exactly what it is. If you look at the venues in which they make many of these statements, they're speaking in front of like Iranian military members or very conservative factions of the regime, and they're meant for a domestic audience. But it's like the equivalence of taking something that Ted Cruz or we have a representative from Iowa that has been on the wrong side of the news a lot lately, taking statements like that and giving it international play, it's kind of the same thing. They're just playing to their base. And I think we need to be careful about taking them literally. In Ahmadinejad's case, about wiping out Israel, again, he has no control over the military. He has no such capacity. So why are they trolling us, right?
I mean, to borrow from the internet.
He's trolling. He's the biggest troll there is. Yeah. We're just playing right into it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Tori, that was fascinating. I don't know if you had any other questions before we put our guest on the spot.
No, well, I mean, I liked the fact that we were able to tie in the Iranian-U.S. political situation with Iowa football. Makes total sense to me.
I mean, that's easy. So, it all comes
and
back
it
to
is.
Iowa football, eventually.
Well, that's what the world revolves around, at least for those of us that have any rational sense. So, I think it is time to, let's get a little background, though, on when did you go to Iowa, Yashar, and how did you become a Hawkeye fan?
Yeah, so like I said, I moved to Iowa in high school. I came from L.A., and UCLA was my dream school. I actually was a huge UCLA football fan originally. Big fan of Cade McNown. I don't know if you remember that classic showdown with Wisconsin and the Rose Bowl they had.
I'm a Bears fan. I remember Cade McNown, and I'd rather forget him for the rest of my life.
Yeah, he didn't do too well in the NFL. But in any case, my freshman year actually just happened to be 2002. So it wasn't too difficult to become an Iowa fan. I think the Iowa State game actually was the first time I realized I became a diehard. I stayed in my seat in the student section, I think for half an hour after the game ended with a few of my friends. And that I really took that game to heart. And I think
stop a second. Here's a true story. Jim, what did I say to you as we walked out of the stadium that night?
You said, doesn't matter, run the tables in the Big Ten and go to the Rose Bowl.
I was pretty damn close, except for the stupid Orange Bowl picking us instead, but we did run the table.
We should have been in the Rose Bowl.
Did you also tell them about how you were harassing an old man and a little kid at halftime?
No, I don't talk about that story too often.
Yeah, and actually in 2002, I took a Greyhound to Miami to go to the Orange Bowl.
Oh, well, Jim and I almost died there, so.
Yeah, and you were to Miami, so you were going home with all, like, the parolees.
It took me about 2 years, but it was still a great time.
I took a Greyhound once through Missouri, and I just, you know, I that's a slice of America I don't ever want to see again.
Yeah.
Or watch Breaking Bad. It's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So Yashar, we need to ask you, you know, Michigan State, always a tough game, always a physical game. You know, Iowa ground out a game, and they probably didn't deserve to win last year given how crappy their team was. So what are you feeling this Saturday?
I like the Hawkeyes. Yeah, I like the Hawkeyes. I think if you look at who Michigan State's played outside of Notre Dame, I don't think they've really played anyone. I think their defense...
Inside of Notre Dame, I'll say they haven't played anyone.
Yeah, I think their defense might be slightly overhyped. I don't think they've seen an offensive line like Iowa's in the rushing attack. So I'm going to take Iowa something like, let's say, 2 touchdowns and 2 field goals. I'm going to go 20-13 Iowa. I think they have a QB situation like we did last year, and I think we're going to expose that.
Ooh, that's pretty close to, I think, what Tori and I picked, right?
Yeah, I think so. We're all pretty much in line, which is sort of frightening.
Yeah. And you're going to be there, right?
That's the plan.
All right. In the student section again, or should you not say that in front of our dozens of listeners?
It depends where Flick Shagwell ends up, I suppose.
Well, I'm jealous. I'm going to be here in Philadelphia, but I'm going to try to throw some batteries at Michigan State fans that I see, because that's what, I guess, sports fans in Philadelphia do.
Well, according to, I don't know if you read Tori's column, but according to the new mythos, if you don't wear that T-shirt from 2002, we're in big trouble.
It's in my drawer, and it's ready to be deployed.
Excellent. Otherwise, I'd have to go back to Iowa and FedEx it to you. All right. Well, thank you very much, Yashar. It's always always great to talk to you. I always learn something from speaking with you, and hopefully this is just one step in the progress of relations. And you know, going back to visit your family won't be such a rare thing. It'll become more of a common occurrence. And maybe they can come visit you here and see you on your yacht with all of your bikini babes, like you are in the hip hop videos.
Yeah, I'd love to take them tailgating with you guys.
That would be awesome. All right, well, thank you very much and appreciate it. And let's hope your pick rings true.
Thanks, guys. Go Hawks.
Thanks. Go Hawks. Yashar and I have actually a very large bet on this outcome of this season.
The season?
Too, so. Yeah.
Okay. What is that?
Well, I'm trying to see. I needed to ask him again of what the terms are. I want to say that if they go it's either 6-6 or 7-5. It's a push. But if they do, no, I think I predicted 6-6. So I think if they go 7-5, it's a push and nobody wins. If they go 8-4 or better, I owe him $100. If they go 6-6 or below, he owes me $100. And he's the one that came up with the amount. So I think maybe it's like a Persian thing, like betting.
Because
you know how you and I are. It's like, oh, well, let's bet $10 or a case of beer or a dinner or something.
It's really just a matter of pride.
He's like, hey, do you want to bet? And I'm like, yeah, sure. He's like, how about $100? I'm like, yeah, okay.
Damn.
Jesus. Right out the gate, man. $100. Oh, Jesus.
Okay. Well, maybe we can just...
I guess, you know, it's not gambling if it doesn't hurt to lose, right?
All right, so, well, what are your thoughts then coming up, Michigan State? I mean, they look like a traditional Michigan State team, right? They're completely, indestructible on defense, and their offense looks like can't fight its way out of a wet paper towel.
And kind of cheaty. They had the 5 pass interference calls against Notre Dame. And so, yeah, they're going to grab and push and cheap shot you like a typical D'Antonio team.
That guy was they won by 3 touchdowns, but they had 2 defensive scores in the same game.
Yeah.
Sort of the non-conference. Yeah, I don't know. D'Antonio had some nice things to say, though, in this week's teleconference about Iowa and about Ferentz. I don't know if – is that new?
No. I mean, I think he's really tried to sort of, you know, which a lot of the non-elite Big Ten teams have done is try to model themselves after what Ferentz did. And, you know, when Iowa was the bullies of the Big Ten and tried to, you know, out-physical you and coach your players up, I mean, that's a blueprint for success. And, you know, flattery is the sincere – or how is it? Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, yeah. Which, you know, is great. But unfortunately, I don't really like all these other teams doing it better than us at times.
It's like you're supposed to imitate, not improve.
Yes. What's the other cliche about the student outperforming the master at some point?
Take pebble from hand, grasshopper.
Exactly. I'm just gonna sit here and spout cliches.
Yeah, why not? You know, for the next it would sound minutes. Like every other sports podcast.
Hey, you're the one that said we had to take them one game at a time.
Yeah, I know. I could kick myself for saying that, but you know, I like to mix metaphors too. Like we'll burn that bridge when we come to it. That's always, it's always one of my favorites. But it's like we're talking about the, you know, taking each game. But you know,
when I look at this game, I it's hard to fear them given that they were one of the few bright spots last year. I mean, a game we really had no business winning on the road in the muck and pulled it out. You know, we're at home. We're feeling good about our team. They've been looking pretty dominant in their last two or three games. And so it's hard not to be optimistic about it. I mean, I think that there's no way they could lose? Heck no. I think they could lose any game left, but I think they can win most of them too.
Yeah, and I think I go back to not last year because I do believe last year was probably a fluke. Really shouldn't have won that game. And we've talked before that as bad as 4-8 felt, it really should have been 3-9. But, you know, I go back to 2011. Because if you recall, we had a pretty decent, so-so bottom, middle of the league, bottom of the bowl-bound team in 2011. Michigan State was coming back, you know, they had that 2 years in a row in Kinnick and they were coming off that just shellacking we gave them in 2010 and they were going to blow us out and they did win comfortably, but not at the same level. If you recall, I mean, it was even late in the, or early in the fourth quarter, it felt like we could have mounted a comeback. I think, we started to feel like the Pitt game a little bit. And I think it ended up, you know,
16 point win for them, but you're right. It didn't feel like a blowout for most of the day.
And I think, you know, we're driving and ultimately didn't score, but it felt like, okay, if we just score here, get an onside kick. We got a chance, you know, or something like that, you know, late in the game, which certainly was not the case, the year before when they just kind of, you know, after Micah Hyde's return, they just kind of hung it up and quit playing, you know? So I don't feel, I feel like we have every reason to be optimistic, particularly when watching the two teams this year and how they're progressing. It's, of course, it's hard to measure them coming off a bye. I don't think that helps, by the way, coming off a bye. I think that coming off a bye and going right to a road game, your first road game.
Especially in college, it doesn't seem to. I think you kind of lose some focus with the players or something like that. At least it seems that way for Iowa most of the time. But, you know, I will say the same thing I said before the Northern Illinois game when I made my prediction. When I see two teams that are relatively even matched, I tend to look at which team has the better quarterback. And I think right now that's Iowa because Michigan State's kind of a mess at quarterback. Now, they have a tremendous defense, a great defense, you know, but I don't think they're a completely impenetrable defense. It's not like they've played a super slate of really awesome teams or anything like that. So, you know, I think you got to go with the team that has the guy under center that can make things happen.
And is this the first time since Iowa State, or you say, you know, when it comes down to who's got the better quarterback, you say it's us?
Well, no, we had a better quarterback than Minnesota.
Since the last time, I mean, we had a lot more intangibles than Minnesota or Missouri State. I'm thinking when two teams are even on paper and
you're just going
by the quarterback comparison.
I think so.
Yeah, I think it's really going to come down to the fact that I don't see them putting up a lot of points.
Nope.
And I just feel like there's a lot of different ways that we can score. If their defense is stopping up the run, maybe we can pass. And if the deep, you know, if we're starting to have some troubles there, maybe we can mix it up a little bit. And I feel like maybe I'm not thinking we're going to put 23 points on these guys, but I, you know, we could win a low scoring affair. You know, it could be a 17 to 10 type affair.
All right. Now here's the worry that I do have. Our poor kickoff return, setting them up with short fields, which will help them with a bad offense. That's one. And their propensity to be able to get turnovers and to score on defense. And, you know, we've seen, what, two pick sixes, I think, already this year? And then the interception in the end zone last week. So turnovers and special teams.
Wait, how many pick sixes has Jake thrown?
I thought it was two. Maybe it's just one.
I don't think he's thrown. Has he thrown any?
Yeah, there was at least one.
Which one?
Well, I can't remember the game now, but there wasn't it. See, now you're gonna make me look it up on that.
But what about us? We've got a fumble return for a touchdown. We have two pick sixes in one game. I mean, shouldn't they be more concerned about our defense? Just looking at the big play potential and the scoring potential of the defense.
Yeah.
So what is your prediction? I mean, given what Yashar thinks, and given the fact that you guys seem to have a mostly friendly wager on the line.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit when you threw out just a random score.
Well, wasn't my random mine score. Was that was very... my pick. I'm going to pick 17-10 Iowa.
Oh, that is your score. Well, I'm one different than you. I actually think it's going to be another field goal fest for Mike Myers. I think we get one touchdown and three field goals and win 16-10.
16-10. I like it. 17-10. Well,
yeah, we were close. I did do my math right.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's if it plays out that way, certainly not going to be upset. And I think that if the offense can just get Mike within striking range, maybe we can start to, look like the 85 Michigan game where you just roll up a lot of field goals. Or what was the other one? The 05 Iowa State game.
Oh, don't ever even bring that stupid game up again.
We could flip the script on that one and get like...
How about the Penn State game with the
6-4?
6-4 when we gave them the up yours safeties.
That game set football back 100 years.
I don't know. I sort of love that game though. Like the way you love an ugly dog. You know, it's like so brutally ugly that it's just there's something endearing about it.
Well, we're still talking about it. It's been almost 10 years. We're still talking about that 6-4. So
exactly.
Well, with that, I guess we'll look forward to the game. And sorry you're going to miss it, but
Well, I'll be wearing the black t-shirt on the plane, so hopefully its mojo will still work from 10,000 feet. But if it doesn't, that's the only reason why Iowa's going to lose, is because the t-shirt was too high in the stratosphere.
Too far out of range.
Something like that. Because it can transmit through the television, obviously. Well, yeah.
That's obvious.
But, yeah, I mean, it's science.
You can get all like Star Trek on and say, well, you know, it's a reverse tachyon field.
Exactly. All right. We should probably end this podcast.
I think so. It stopped being funny a long time ago, like 3 episodes.
Not to be.
All right. With that, we'll just say on Iowa.
Go Hawks.